Hi, I'm Marianne Schuco from All's Authors, and you're listening to UK Health Radio. Angela G. Gentile is the author of two books in the All's Authors collection. She came to us in 2016 with her book, Caring for a Husband with Dementia, The Ultimate Survival Guide, inspired by her experience counseling eight amazing caregiving women. Her second book, Alzheimer's, Dementia, and Memory Loss, A Helpful Guide for Caregivers, was recently published and was featured on our blog on February 10th. Her books have been referred to as a first aid kit for caregivers. A social worker specializing in geriatrics with more than 25 years experience, Angela currently works as a consultant to assist families on a dementia journey using a variety of modalities. Her career spans work in healthcare, private practice, long-term care, home care, and nonprofits, and she has written seven books and countless articles, contributed to two books, and co-authored a mobile app for iOS called Dementia Caregiver Solutions. In this episode, we discuss the value of working with a social worker one-on-one to navigate the myriad of issues related to dementia care, how language affects discussions around dementia, the upside to using humor in caregiving, and the realities of canine cognitive dysfunction, also known as doggy dementia. Let's get started. Hi, Angela. Welcome to the All's Authors podcast. How are you today?
Hi, Marianne. I'm great. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for coming. I just want everyone to know that you were one of the authors who came to us in our first year back in 2016.
Yes, it's hard to believe it's been that long, but time flies, really. It's crazy.
It does. And it was like during that time where we were wondering, would anybody even be interested in working with us or sharing their book on our platform? We had no idea what to expect at the time. And now here we are, we're going into like the eighth year and we've grown so much. So we thank you for being one of the first people to put your faith in us and to entrust us with your book.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been a really nice experience. And I'm excited to be here again.
Yeah, thanks. So we have a lot of things to talk about today. We're going to talk about the first book that you contributed to our collection, but I also want to talk about the new book that you have coming up and how you all got started in this dementia world.
Yeah, well, my first encounter with people living with Alzheimer's was when I was in my late teens and I worked in a nursing home. I guess, you know, nowadays we don't like to use that term, but that's what it was. Yep. I found out I loved working with older adults, and that sparked my interest in getting a social work degree in like specializing in geriatrics. And a few years later after that, we learned that my grandfather had Alzheimer's disease. I watched him decline and eventually pass. It was a difficult time for us all. And then a second grandparent also had dementia. And at the end, she didn't even recognize me. That was heartbreaking. And more recently, I cared for my late dog, Rocky, who had what I lovingly refer to as doggy dementia. My experience with caring for a dog with dementia can be found in the last chapter of my new book, which I'll be talking more about. And I eventually found my way back to working with older adults in different capacities. My roles in the healthcare field included a social worker in a personal care home, a home care case coordinator, and a geriatric mental health clinician. I also worked as a private practitioner on and off throughout the years, and that's what I'm doing now. And my work in my private practice includes working with people with dementia and their families who are affected.
Okay. So what do you have to offer, you know, your clients? If I were to be a new client calling and asking for a consultation, what would I expect from that?
So the main thing that I do is I offer emotional support, and I do a lot of different modalities of therapy. So I can do cognitive behavior therapy, I can do emotional, you know, release, I can do I can do the narrative therapy, I can pull out all kinds of tricks and tips and tools out of my little bag, I call it, to help people navigate through the system, navigate through their feelings and all their issues that they're dealing with, and the grief and the caregiver stress that people are under. So yeah, it's more of a, I'm a sounding board. I'm someone they can vent to if needed. And I'm a trustworthy person that, that has the experience to understand what they're going through.
That's great. And I just wanted to let the listeners know that this type of help is available.
For sure.
Yeah. And a lot of people don't realize it or don't realize how they can benefit from it. And you do telehealth visits or is it all in person?
I do both. I do home visits, telehealth, either virtual or telephone. And I have in-person sessions as well.
Excellent. That's great. So what was it about dementia that made you want to write about it? Because I know you have more than one book on this topic and you have other books out as well. I believe seven.
Yes, this is my seventh book.
You published seven books.
Yes. So way back for my first book on dementia care, let's go back to that. So my final project in my Master of Social Work program education was designing, implementing, and evaluating a short-term counseling program for women who had a husband with dementia. And that program went so well that I ended up writing a book about it. And that book is called Caring for a Husband with Dementia. And that was released in 2015, which is 8 years ago. Mm-hmm. But during the course of this 8 years that went by, I had people asking me, well, where's the book for us husbands? And where's the book for me? I'm a child of a parent with dementia. So what I decided to do was find a man who had a wife with dementia and ask him if he wanted to help me revamp my book to be more inclusive. I found one man who was willing to do this, but he was unable to complete the task, unfortunately. So my search was on again. And then I found Brent Hoag, who is a he was a member of one of my online support groups that I run on Facebook and that I co-founded. And Brent is a prolific writer online, and he was freely sharing his experiences with others. And he was more than willing to help me out. So he is instrumental in this new book that I've written.
And what did you find were the differences between men caring for wives and women caring for husbands?
Oh, boy. One of the things that Brent said for him that really stood out, and I'll just give it as an anecdote. I don't know if it's research-based, but it is his experience, is when he would go out with his wife and the people, like the restaurant people or the store, the sales clerks, they didn't necessarily know that his wife was not well, that she had dementia. And if they started asking her a question, he would speak for her. And some of the clerks and restaurant staff would get very defensive, almost thinking, why are you speaking for your wife? Like Brent found that time and time again that he felt like almost like anger from the people that he was trying to help his wife. They didn't understand why he was speaking for his wife. So he said that was one of the biggest differences that he's noted between women and men who are, you know, trying to assist somebody with dementia. He said that he doesn't think that women would get the same kind of response if they're speaking on behalf of their husbands. So there's a few other things sprinkled throughout my newest book, which we're getting to, on, you know, on his experiences from a male caregiver perspective. And because he has so many, he's written so much and he's read so much, I really do respect his opinion on these things.
That's really interesting. And I was wondering, like, what other types of role reversals he might have encountered.
Yeah, well, that too, like he said, it's harder for a man to that has not cooked or cleaned or done laundry. Mm-hmm. He said it's really hard for a man to try to learn these things, even a simple thing like putting on a brassiere. Like he said, those kinds of things are so difficult to learn. Like, how do you put a bra on your wife? He said it's a simple thing for a woman, but it can be an awkward and, you know, it's kind of something you have to learn as a male to do that for a wife.
Yeah, I know that a lot of the male caregivers, they tend to go out to eat. They usually take their meals out at like a local restaurant where they feel comfortable and things. A lot of couples do that. They don't want to bother with shopping and cooking and cleaning up the mess, which makes a lot of sense.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. So you mentioned the Facebook support group. Is that still up and running?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Yeah. So with caring for a husband with dementia, there's, I'll just have to backtrack a little bit, because in that book, there was a dementia consultant and educator, Karen Terrell, who really helped me with this first book. And we ended up making an app for an Apple product for iOS, for iPhone, mm-hmm. iPads. We made an app called Dementia Caregiver Solutions, and it mm-hmm. helps people deal with what we thought was the 25 most difficult but common behaviors that you might see in people with Alzheimer's or dementia. And part of what we needed to do with our app was, we decided if you needed more help, you can reach out to us, which was one option, or you can join this support group on Facebook, because a support group will offer them so much more peer-to-peer support, people that are going through what they're going through, or that might know, you know, what it feels like to go through these things. So we also added to our, you know, our repertoire, or what we had to offer, we offered a support group, a closed Facebook group. So that's called Dementia Caregiver Solutions Support Group. And you need to answer questions to get in, but it's free to join as long as you have a Facebook account. And it's co-moderated and administered. And we have over 500 people in that group now. So, and Brent Hoag is very instrumental in that as well. And he's a moderator at this point.
That sounds great. I'm going to put the link to that in the show notes if anybody's interested, and also to the app. If people are interested in obtaining that, yeah, they can go to the show notes and find that, as well as other links and info about Angela and her books and her products. So you mentioned that when you were a teenager, you worked in a nursing home. So did I when I was 15. That was my very first job. I worked in the kitchen. So I didn't really have a lot of exposure to residents, except there was this one little old Italian lady. She really wasn't little and old. She was old, but not little. She didn't like the food. So she often came down to the kitchen and threw cans at us. She probably had dementia. Yeah. She'd be down there hollering in Italian because she probably was a phenomenal Italian cook. And now she was in this facility, and then she didn't care for the food at all. It was institutional and awful. But I remember her. So I really didn't have a lot of experience working with people with dementia. So you did mention that you worked in a nursing home at a very young age. Mm-hmm. But what other experience have you had with nursing homes, home care, assisted living, any of that?
Oh, boy. I've had quite a bit. So my experiences with home care as a case coordinator helped me mm-hmm. appreciate the role of not only a person working in a stressful, complicated, burdened healthcare system, which I actually burnt out from and wrote about that too, but also it also helped me empathize with the families and the people who are affected by dementia and other related conditions. I learned that there are a lot of limitations with a Canadian publicly funded program, and the burden of care often falls onto the family. And I visited many assisted living residences here, and in Canada, they are very expensive for the most part. Not everyone can afford these beautiful, often luxurious senior residences, but for those who can, they are a great option. We have also seen private memory care options popping up, which is a higher cost alternative to our nursing homes or personal care homes, which provide the 24-hour nursing care. And I have worked in long-term care as a social worker, and I've seen some special behavior units for those who require increased security due to a risk of wandering or elopement. And there are locked wards and special wander guard bracelets that help prevent someone from leaving the residence and being exposed to the elements and reducing the risk of harm.
Wow. So it sounds like you've had quite a career. It's really well-rounded.
Yeah, I've been honored. Actually, I feel it's quite a privilege to be able to care for, you know, thousands of mm-hmm. clients and family members, and I continue to do so. I did retire from healthcare in 2021, and now I'm pursuing other ventures such as my private private therapy and writing. And I also have a little jewelry business on the side, which is lots of fun.
Oh, yeah. 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 That sounds interesting. Yeah. I always felt privileged to work with this population. And in many ways, it wasn't that hard because a lot of it was just about sharing information, especially things like we're available in the community because most people have no knowledge when they embark on this dementia journey, what types of resources are even available or the levels of care and how to obtain them. So that was very rewarding to be able to kind of give people options or let people see how they can navigate this themselves. It's very important.
And as a social worker, that's definitely one of the roles of a social worker too, is to provide people with resources and options.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, Mum and Dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Yeah, that makes a big difference. So how has your experience working with dementia changed you? Thinking back to when you were that child experiencing your grandparents' decline and to where you are now.
Well, I have learned how to be compassionate towards people who are affected by dementia, whether it be the person themselves living with a condition or the care partners who are doing their best to support the person living with dementia. I'm very comfortable talking about Alzheimer's and related conditions, and I have a very soft spot in my heart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Me too. I had my first job working in long-term care when I was in my 20s, trying to redefine my career because I wasn't working out the way I had planned. I developed my little soft spot there, even though I had an aunt that had Alzheimer's, so I was familiar with what was going on with that, but I found that I enjoyed them. You know, I didn't really think of it as hard work. Mm-hmm. Not that it wasn't hard, it always is hard, but it would be fun to go up there and see, you know, what's going to happen tonight. We go up to the memory care unit, you know. So yeah, that was a lot of fun. Have you done any advocacy work other than the writing or your support groups and things? Have you done any thing like with legislation or that type of work, Alzheimer's Society?
Yeah, I haven't done any legislation work. But years ago, I did volunteer with the Alzheimer's Society as a support group facilitator. And I learned a lot about how caregivers struggle and how they benefit from sharing with each other. And my work with the healthcare system helped me flex my advocacy muscle, as there were many times I had to advocate for families or at least coach them on how to communicate with the nurses, doctors, administrators, or others in the system to help them get their loved ones' needs met. Mm-hmm. I've seen too many instances where the family or caregiver is ignored or dismissed, which is very wrong. Ageism is rampant in healthcare, unfortunately. And more needs to be done in terms of recognizing caregivers as a very important part of the team when caring for a person with a neurocognitive disorder. They're often a hidden patient, and we need to make sure that their needs are met as well, because caregiver burnout is real, and it can be prevented with the right supports at the right time. And I also help raise funds for the Alzheimer's Society, which I'm holding a book launch for my new book, and I will be raising funds for Alzheimer's Society.
That's great. Yeah, like I like what you said about the caregiver often being like the unseen patient or the second patient in the equation and are often overlooked. Ageism is rampant, but so is sexism.
Yes. Yeah.
And most of the caregivers are women.
Mm-hmm.
And the most important thing to be in as a caregiver is to be an advocate for and an ally for the one you're caring for, which can be challenging for a lot of people.
Yes, unfortunately.
Yeah. So we recommend people keep notes. It's always a good idea to have a journal or some kind of notebook where you can write what's happening and be able to bring that with you on appointments so you can share that information with doctors and practitioners so things don't get overlooked. And I know a lot of times you feel like you're rushed when you go into an appointment. They only have like 5 or 10 minutes for you. And by the time you finally work up enough nerve to bring up your concerns to being ushered out the door. So it's important to be prepared when you go in for an appointment. Sure. Yeah,
definitely. Yes. Definitely.
So tell us a little more about this, this new book that you have coming out.
Right.
It just came out, right? Was it published yet?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it is published and launched and I'm really excited about it. So my newest book, Alzheimer's, Dementia, and Memory Loss, A Helpful Guide for Caregivers, was self-published through Amazon KDP, and it's a nonfiction, educational, self-help style of book. It's also part workbook. There are 210 pages, which includes 21 chapters, and it's available in both paperback and ebook for Kindle. And my newest book was written to be inclusive of all genders, and I use the terms they, them, and their to refer to all gender identifiers in both the singular and plural forms. And this is to lessen the complication of needing to use him, her, she, he, etc. I also use the terms neurocognitive disorder and cognitive disorders to describe dementia and other related conditions to reflect the change of language amongst medical professionals. The term major neurocognitive disorder is another term used for dementia, and mild neurocognitive disorder is a term equivalent to mild cognitive impairment. So those are big words, mumbo jumbo, but I think it's good to introduce these. If you have not heard of these terms before, I think it's good to see them in writing when you're reading the book so that if you do hear these words, you'll kind of have a little bit of an understanding of what the health professionals are talking about. The book is divided into four parts. Part one is the introductory information about cognitive disorders. Part two is emotional considerations. Part three is practical tips. And part four is special considerations. In part three, the coping with difficult behavior, which I mentioned earlier, is comprised of a whopping 45 pages. Providing the caregiver with information, tips, and possible solutions to dealing with 25 difficult yet common behaviors seen in dementia. For example, some people with dementia do not want to have a bath or shower. There are many possible solutions to try, such as try to determine the reason the person doesn't want to have a bath or shower and then alter your response or your actions. Try to keep the bath or shower routine as close to their usual habits as possible. Example, a shower in the morning or a bath at night. Have someone else suggest the person has a bath or remind the person how good it felt after having a shower last time. I also provide a tool called a behavior management worksheet framework where you create a form that has 5 columns. On this form, you record the date, time, triggers, what was tried, and the outcome. And this worksheet can help you determine what works and what doesn't work. And at the end of many of the chapters, I provide sections to write down your answers to some of the questions I ask you to reflect upon. Some prefer to use a separate notebook or journal, and others leave the answers there for other family members to read and consider.
So I like that part of it where, you know, you can share it amongst other family members. Mm-hmm. If you have a team of caregivers, that would that would be really helpful. It sounds like there's like a lot of grounds for discussion as well, raising sensitive topics people don't necessarily know how to talk about. So that sounds like the book would be a catalyst for that.
Yes. And I have this feature in the first book as well. Mm-hmm. And I've heard it's helpful. So I figured I better keep it in this book too.
Yeah. No, I think that works. I think that's great. And I also like, you know, your use of language, trying to in dementia care, since I've been doing it since I started my book, we'll go back that far, 2001, when I started writing a book about Alzheimer's, just the language used in trying to describe dementia in dementia care is just always changing. It's evolving. So they used to say people were senile, or they had like hardening of the arteries and things like that. And it was just a natural evolution of old age, which we know is not true. And now, like with you bringing up these new terms about neurocognitive disorder, that really kind of helps to even clarify things even more. Because many people are confused about the whole concept of dementia and Alzheimer's, and, you know, don't realize that dementia is the umbrella term and Alzheimer's is the most common form of dementia. And Alzheimer's and dementia may not be the same thing, because there are other types of dementias that are not Alzheimer's and have different symptoms. So I think that it's helpful that you've used these new terms in the book as well, and the gender pronouns, which have become very important. And as an author, it really helps. It makes it easier for us when we use the they, their, them pronouns rather than, you know, his and his or her or his slash her. That gets to be cumbersome at times. It just seems to make a lot more sense and flows better and addresses everybody's needs, because we're not, people and families with dementia they run the whole span of everybody. So that's great. That sounds wonderful. I wish you success on the book. It is being featured, or it was featured on the All's Authors blog February 10th, just a few days ago. So I think that you can go there. I'll leave the link in the show notes so people can read the blog post and the one from the book before. That's also in the show notes. Are you able to read to us a portion of the book? Do you have an excerpt prepared?
Well, I was thinking I would share from the humor chapter. Okay. So the chapter, Brent Hoag had said that in the first book, I kind of missed the boat in terms of humor as a coping mechanism. So I said to him, well, hey, why don't you write a chapter on that? So because he's big into using humor as a coping mechanism. So he did. There's a whole chapter on humor. And the chapter is called Lighten Up, Humor as a Coping Strategy. And he shared one of his, it's like a little vignette, a little story about him and his loving wife, beautiful wife, Sally. And I will read to you on page 70, his little story. Okay. He calls it, oh no, please, Sally, don't say that. And also on the other side of the page that I'm reading from, there's a picture of Brent with a clown nose. So he's got lots of stories, that's for sure. Okay, so, oh no, please, Sally, don't say that. My wife, when her Alzheimer's disease was in stage 6 and sadly racing towards stage 7, introduced me to a new Alzheimer's disease-derived expression. Sally first, thankfully, said this to me privately. It only took me a New York minute to be able to successfully understand and interpret it. It simply translated that Sally was very tired. Fair enough. Even though my dear wife had very little memory left any longer, my initial response to her was instinctively, okay, Sally, but you should not say that out loud. So far, so good. However, as we all know, I was more or less kidding myself in that regard. Then the inevitable finally happened. We were exiting our favorite restaurant in Vancouver, BC, after our having had a lovely and private, safe distance COVID dinner. As we walked outside, the hostess said, have a nice evening. Lined up, waiting their turn to go in, were approximately 10 people. My wife was understandably tired, and sundowning had taken over. Then it happened. Sally said in a loud voice, Brent, all I want to do is go home and get naked. Time stood still for me. The young hostess looked shocked, as did most of the lined up people who were suddenly looking downwards at the ground in their apparent effort to avoid making eye contact. One lady actually laughed out loud. Once inside our car, I slightly recovered, smiled, and then chuckled.
That's funny. Yeah. So, humor, that is a good defense mechanism. Did you have another one you wanted to read?
I also wanted to share a poem mm-hmm. that Brent wrote. It's called Sail On. So far from the shore, I feel like I am no more. So far from land, I am a lost husband. I am losing you. You are now going away, like a lost horizon on a cloudy day. From the deck, I will release a dove as a sign for you, the one I love. Even though you are still here, I find that you are no longer near. Because you went adrift at sea, I will never again really be me. I love you, Sally, wherever you are. My heart is breaking because you have forever gone afar. Even though I have found the shore, the we and us are never more. Sail on, my love, sail on, my love. I pray that you will find my dove that I sent to you, my love. Sail on, sail on, until you are finally free from the bonds of this cruel sea. I will see you one day beyond the horizon, and my heavy tears will be no more as we join together once again, so far from the shore. Love, Brent.
Mm, it is so beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Mm. He actually had that made into a song. Mm. And it's just beautiful.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
A for horses, B for mutton, C more cheeks, dig for victory, E bar gold.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle Magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better.
Marks and Spencer.
Add Health Triangle Magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
T for two.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Is there a way to listen to that? Is it public or is it?
I'm working on it. Mm-hmm. I have to work with the publishing agency. I'm communicating with Brent right now about that. So yeah. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, that would be great. Let us know if that comes, you know, because I think people might want to hear the song. It's beautiful.
Yes, it has been. Beautiful. Yeah, it has been heard by people because he can pass it around mm-hmm. Privately, but I don't know. It's not available publicly as of yet, but hopefully soon.
That sounds wonderful. So let's talk about doggy dementia, because I mentioned to you before that one of the most popular posts and blog podcasts we've had at All's Authors for a while was with Lisa Skinner, and we couldn't figure out why. And then I realized that she talked a lot about her dog's canine dementia. And we figured that had to be it. That was the topic that people were tuning in on. And I also had a cat that had, we believe, had dementia. And there is something called feline cognitive dysfunction. So let's talk about that.
Yeah. So I had a dog named Rocky. He was a cockapoo, so cocker spaniel poodle mix. Very smart, obedient, a very beautiful, lovely dog. He died, he was 16 years old. He died last year. But in the last 2 years of his life, he developed the symptoms of dementia. So he started shadowing me. Like I noticed he would be under my feet all the time. And he started getting very anxious. And I could tell sometimes he didn't really know where he was. He would be standing in the bathroom all by himself, just kind of staring into space. We knew he had some cataracts developing, but it wasn't necessarily his cataracts that were causing this. And we also knew he had hearing loss. So all these things started piling up on him. And we started to, wonder if there's something we can do to help him. So I ended up, he became incontinent. Like he had, I'm just looking at my chapter here on doggy dementia, which is the last chapter in my book. He had coordination issues. He was falling. He would trip up the stairs. Going up the stairs, he would trip. He had problems with his appetite. He had trouble chewing. He had all these little growths and lumps and bumps and pain and discomfort. And he would sleep a lot. So, you know, he had all these different medical problems. And on top of it, he had all these different behaviors that were happening. He even had what we called sundowning. So in the evenings, he would get restless and he would want to go outside. Just like a person with dementia that sundowns, they want to go home. Well, he was wanting to go outside. So we'd let him out and he'd come back in. And then he'd want to go out again and he'd come back in. It was just like, it was that restless, I want to go. I don't know where I want to go. I want to get out of here. I want to go somewhere. But yeah, there wasn't really anywhere for him to go. So then I would bring him in and sometimes I would just get him to sit by me and I hold him. Like I would hold him nice and, you know, not tight, but just nice and snug and cuddle with him. And then sometimes that seemed to offer him some reassurance and some security. And so then he would settle a little bit. And I also noticed that he had a habit of scratching at the door before, like when he was well and, you know, when he was younger, he would scratch the door to get in or get out or whatever. And then I noticed he started scratching the door even when it was open. Meaning, you don't need to scratch the door, honey. You know, it's open already, you know? So he would start doing these little doggy dementia moments. I don't know what you would call them, but I saw all kinds of different little behaviors going on. So yeah, and the vet, we did have veterinarian guidance through all these things. And yeah, the vet said it was a type of dementia and old age. So at 16, you know, his illness and his cognitive functioning, everything just got too much. So we had to put him down, unfortunately.
Yeah. Wow, that's really sad. But it's interesting the way it kind of follows a lot of the same symptoms that people experience. You know, with our cat, he did a lot of those things. He would like, we'd find him like standing somewhere, like staring at the wall and just kind of immobilized for a while. And he grew incontinent. He lost like half his body weight, even though he ate, he was eating fairly well. And I think for this cat, probably the worst thing that ever happened to him in his life was when he was how old, 12, 10 or 12 years old. And my daughter brought home another cat, a young cat. He never recovered from the intrusion of this second animal in the house. They never got along. Aww. So it was sad. He was just so miserable and he would sleep a lot and he would hide from the other cat. And, you know, we just didn't know what to do. And fortunately, he passed away kind of on his own terms, really. So we didn't have to go through the agony of having to make that choice for him. But, we definitely thought that he had some kind of cognitive impairment. So our animals, they can also have these illnesses as well. Take care of them too.
And some people aren't cut out for that kind of caregiving. Like I put up with it, not put up with it, but you know, I dealt with these things for 2 years. Like I had people telling me like I would never have done that, Angela. There's no way I could have done that. And I said, well, you do what you do. Like caregivers, you don't, you know, you're not really given a choice. If someone you love, or something, in this case you love, develops dementia, you can't just toss them aside.
That's right.
There is a choice, for sure. You could, but in your heart of hearts, like, you don't. It's just, if you're a loving, human, compassionate person, then you don't. You do what you can.
Yeah, people would say, you know, especially with the accidents, you know, just, you know, we had to let him go because he was messing up the house. But I was like, I can't, I'm not going to do that. I'm just not going to be that person who I'm going to put my cat down because he had an accident. So we cat, you know, we hung on as long as we could. And it was ironic because we had been for a couple of weeks and we had decided we were going to call the vet. We need to call the vet. It's time. And I just couldn't make the call. And then the one morning he had some kind of a seizure or something and he just crawled into his crate and he passed away. It was, he was so good to us. So convenient. And it was just so sad. And, but I was just glad that I had, didn't have to make that choice, you know, cause we'd had him for like 14 years and he had been through a lot. It was a cat that had had many operations and had gotten into a lot of skirmishes outside when he was an outdoor cat for most of that time and come home with injuries that would become abscesses and
he'd
have operations and meds. And he went through a lot. So he really lived a long time. And just observing the mental changes was kind of fascinating because you're not, you know, didn't expect it.
No.
From an animal. But it is real. So people have animals that are displaying symptoms of cognitive impairment, you might want to get them checked out a little bit, make sure there's nothing else wrong. Like with people, there are other things that can cause cognitive issues that can be corrected. Yeah. And just love them.
Yes.
Love them through it. How have readers responded to your books?
Well, my earlier book on the subject, Caring for a Husband with Dementia, is one of the 7 books I've written and is by far my biggest seller. Maybe it's thanks to you guys.
Hope so.
As of this date, I have 50 ratings on Amazon with an average of 4.5 stars out of 5. So I know that this book has been helpful, and I can only hope my revised and expanded version, this new book, Alzheimer's Dementia and Memory Loss, will also be helpful and receive reviews as good as the first. And on the back cover of the book, I indicate that this is a first aid kit, and it will help you address many concerns and questions you may have. And it has been dubbed the quintessential survival guide for caregivers. And some say that because I am a clinical social worker and therapist, that reading my book is like having 1 year's worth of counseling for a tiny fraction of the cost. It can be empowering and help give the reader concrete answers and solutions. They don't feel so alone in their experience. And I always say it's the unknown that's the scariest. And this book helps with mapping out what may be coming and how to deal with what is facing them now or what the future difficulties they may encounter on their caregiving journey. My words and words of others who have been there can help the reader put words and feelings down on paper to help define, validate, and normalize their experience. Learning how to externalize dementia can be a monumental and helpful change in thinking. Learning how to communicate differently by using therapeutic reasoning or little white lies known as fiblets can also help avoid conflict and repetitive distress. Learning how to improv, right? We call it improv, can help alleviate the confusion and the agitation for the person with dementia. But there is a bit of a cautionary note because it's my book is not, both of them are not always an easy read for some people because I take the care partner from coping and dealing with the earlier signs and symptoms of dementia right through to the end stages, including how to manage difficult but common behaviors, long-term care placement, and grief and loss. Some chapters can be left for another time. And this bedside Bible, as termed by one woman, can offer much needed comfort and support when needed. One of the overall goals of this book, and both of my books for that matter, is to encourage caregivers to keep themselves healthy mentally and physically, because as we know, if the caregiver is not well, then it results in two people who need to be cared for.
Mm, so true. So where can people find your books?
So my books are available worldwide on Amazon, because I do publish through Amazon KDP. Mm-hmm. And my book, Alzheimer's Dementia and Memory Loss, is available in both paperback and ebook formats. And I also have copies which I can sign and mail out as well, if people prefer that.
Awesome. And it's available in the All's Authors bookstore.
Yes, it mm-hmm. is. And I guess both of them will be then. Yeah.
Yes, they will be.
Great.
That's wonderful. Is there anything else you'd like to tell our listeners before we say goodbye?
Well, I do have a Facebook page. So if mm-hmm. anyone's interested in checking out what I'm doing, it's called Angela G. Gentile, spelled G-E-N-T-I-L-E, M-S-W-R-S-W, which is my initials for my education. And I also have a website, AngelaGGentile.com. I post articles and news on my Facebook page and my website. So if anyone's interested in following me, I suggest they sign up for my blog on my website by providing me with an email address. And a like, you know, tick the like on my page will help you see what I'm up to. And I also have a smart bio link. And the URL for that is smart.bio/AngelaGGentile.
Awesome. That's so great. Thank you so much for visiting our show today and for being an All's Authors with two books now.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed sharing what I know and what I'm learning. And I know I have a lot more to learn. So,
oh, yeah.
I thank
constantly
you.
Evolving.
Yes. And constantly. I thank you very, very much.
Thank you. Hey, thanks for making it to the end. Angela and I have a treat for you. While we were doing the interview, Brent Hoag's poem, Sail On, dedicated to his wife, Sally, was put to music by Songfinch and is sung by a dazzling young singer named Effie. The link to the music video on YouTube is in the show notes, but you can hear the song right now. Enjoy!
Dedicated to Sally. So from the shore, I feel like I am no more. So far from land, I am now a lost husband. I am losing you. You are going away like a lost horizon. Sail on, my love. I
Thank you for listening to All's Authors Untangling Alzheimer's and Dementia on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio.